So this week I'm lucky enough to be joined by Amy Stokes-Waters, the owner and CEO of the Cyber Escape Room Company. Thank you for taking the time to speak to us, Amy.
Yes, that's all right. Pleasure to be here. Pleasure.
Good, good. So just before we get into the topics today, perhaps you could just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into this space.
Yeah, cool. So I was, I've always been in sales and marketing, kind of in IT, moved into a sales role at a pen testing company and kind of really got involved with the community from there. Decided to start my own business, realized I'm not technical at all. Like someone asked me the other week if I could find the command line on my laptop. And I was like, what does that even mean? So not technical, it's unreal. So I was like, right, what can I do? And I realized that, cybersecurity training is really, really bloody boring. So I thought, let's mix that up a bit. So, yeah, started a company focused on cyber escape rooms.
That's perfect. I mean, I wish more non-technical people would get into cybersecurity.
Definitely.
Because it doesn't need to be so daunting, does it? But you hit the nail on the head. Quite a good place to start, I guess, is just to talk about why on earth cybersecurity awareness training is so boring. And I think it's a perception that I think is probably held both within IT teams themselves and the wider organization that have to take part in it. And it always, you know, it always seems like more of a drag than anything. So I guess my first question to you is, could you share some examples of the kind of things that companies are doing wrong traditionally when it comes to those training methods?
Yeah, I think from what I've experienced, I mean, obviously I've worked in quite a few companies and we've had to do mandatory cybersecurity training. It's really dull. So no one really is that engaged in it. I mean, when I relaunched the business back in October, I had 50-ish CISOs in a room. And I did a little talk at the beginning and I said to everyone, right, can you all put your hands up if you've done security awareness training? Thankfully, everyone put their hand up because, you know, they're in charge of that shit. So that was a relief. But I said to them, keep your hands up if you have clicked play on a video, walked off to make a cup of tea, and then come back again and hoped that the video would finish. And I said to them, if you're putting your hands down, you're categorically a liar, because I know for a fact that you've not sat through it. And if you're not sitting through it, and it's your specialist subject, how the hell are you expecting anyone else in the company to engage in it? Why would sales care if you don't care? And that should be your mastermind subject, right? So I think there's that issue, that it is dull. Then there's the issue around, I always find it's punitive. So if you fail a phishing assessment or a phishing campaign or whatever, if you fail that, then you end up being mandated to do some more training. It's too much. I think it's too much stick and not enough carrot, in my opinion, which is why I kind of wanted to flip it on its head and make it something that people want to do rather than have to do.
Well, that makes perfect sense. I mean, it benefits the whole company if we can get people engaged in this cybersecurity, in this awareness training. And what do you think that lack of engagement at the moment that we're seeing, how do you think that affects like the cybersecurity posture of your average company?
Well, I think if you're not engaging in the training, then you're not understanding the threats that are actually you're faced with every day. I mean, everyone receives phishing emails. Everyone has passwords that they're using. And if you don't understand, if you've not sat through that training and understood this is kind of the consequences of you sharing your password with someone or the consequences of you clicking on a phishing email. If you don't understand that, then you're leaving your company wide open to threats. So yeah, people don't understand like how they could be targeted, then they're not on the lookout for it. So people are staying vigilant, and then we end up back in that cycle where we're like, users are the weakest link again, which drives me insane. But I think we're talking about that later, so I won't go into it now. But yeah, I think it's, I think we're not providing ongoing training. So we're doing it as a tick box kind of exercise because, you know, people have got insurance policies that they need to comply with. So if we're doing it as a tick box exercise, then people are forgetting the information as well. So I think we need to kind of look at ongoing security training and we need to make it more engaging.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, do you think there are some misconceptions around cybersecurity training that are that are really contributing to that.
They're probably not misconceptions. They're probably truths, actually. Because I think, like, in the IT,
it is just dull. We are just getting it wrong.
It is, yeah. But I think in the IT world, in the IT world especially, we think cybersecurity is quite interesting. And I mean, how many people do you know in the industry who are like, "I'm a cybersecurity rock star because I one time hacked the White House"? So, like, there's fucking loads of them in there. I mean, loads of them.
Yeah, I've made cybersecurity rock stars.
Yeah, but at kind of the less techie end of the spectrum, identifying phishing emails is actually really boring. It is boring. Watching an animated video about it isn't making it more exciting. I'm not 12. I don't want to watch a cartoon. So I think that's nonsense. But then I think, we've got an image issue in the whole cybersecurity space anyway, which I don't think really helps with engaging people that are not in the industry. So if you look at, well, we've got the hackers in hoodies thing, which if you're, you know, a 23-year-old girl that likes going out and doing bottomless brunch, probably not really relating with that, are you? Nice. Oh, we've got the IT crowd vibe going on as well. But I think it's not really necessarily misconceptions. I think there's an image issue. And then I think there is just the harsh reality that it is boring.
Well, yeah, no, I do agree. So with that being said, what can we do differently then? Can we take different approaches or use different technology to make that more engaging? And I'm guessing the answer is yes.
Yes, the answer is definitely yes, because I'm doing it every day. So I think continuous learning is really crucial, especially in cyber. So if your job's not cybersecurity, which 95% of the organization it isn't, but we still expect them to bloody understand it. If that's not your area, then it's probably not at the forefront of your mind all the time. I know we want it to be at the forefront of people's minds, but it's not, because like we said earlier, they're doing tick box compliance things, they're doing training once a year, whatever. So your brain's not keeping that information in. It's just a fact, right? So we need to do continuous learning. So if you've got bite-sized bits of information, so there's like CyberOff, you know, Ian Murphy, who does his videos. If you've got something like that, where it's like 3 minutes, watch a video, done. Or we've got stuff like Hoxhunt or Culture AI, where it's continuous learning in the workflow. So if you fuck up, it'll send you a message and say, here's what you've done wrong, we fixed it for you, don't do it again. So it kind of keeps it at the forefront of your mind. But yeah, we know bite-sized learning works. I mean, I'm going to show my age here and remind everyone that BBC Bite Size used to be a thing when you did your GCSEs. I'm not sure if it's still around now, but I remember that coming out.
I don't know.
That was bite-sized bits of learning to help you with the GCSEs. So it's a proven method in terms of pedagogical method for, you know, conveying information. Do it little and often. It's like marketing. If you look at how do you market something, you don't market it by going, here's an advert, never seeing that again.
It's very true. It's very true. Also in marketing, you have to very much tailor your message to your audience. So, I think that the same, the same applies to cyber training, I think. So how do you think organizations can actually do that, can tailor that training to their specific audience within the workforce?
It's like with anything really, you need to think about what it is that the person needs to know. So a lot of the time in cyber, we like to show off because we think we're doing cool shit, right? We're not. It's really boring. For everyone else that's not in the industry, it's really boring. It's just you tapping on a computer. No one cares, right? It's not like you've played. It's not like you've been at a Taylor Swift concert. Like, you've not been on stage with Taylor Swift, have you? So that's it. No one gives a f-. So stop showcasing your knowledge. Stop showing off to people about everything that you know and just give them the information that they need. So what do they need to do the job? Brilliant, right? I think if you just give them things that are, try and frame it in a way that will affect them. So if you say to, I don't know, Janice in finance, Janice, if you click on this phishing email, that means that you're not going to be able to send invoices out because the company's fucked, right? That's what she cares about. She cares about being able to send invoices out because that's probably what she's targeted on, right? So you need to find what it is that motivates that person. So what is, like, look at the KPIs. What is their KPIs? How can you kind of relate that back to cybersecurity? If you click on this phishing email, that's going to impact your KPIs from XYZ. If we look at it from that kind of perspective, then people are going to engage in it a bit more and stop bombarding them with that they don't need to know. I don't need to know how a firewall works. I genuinely don't care how a firewall works. Don't tell me about it.
No, most people don't care how it works, as long as it does work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think the comparison to marketing is quite an apt one as well, because we've seen a massive rise in marketing over the last decade or so about of gamification, making things more engaging through you know, turning things into games, and you have a lot of experience in that. What do you think the role that gamification is playing in cybersecurity awareness training right now? And do you think things making it more enjoyable? Should we be doing more of it?
Yeah, so I think there's two ways of motivating people, isn't there? So there's intrinsic factors and extrinsic factors. So extrinsic stuff like, I don't know, if you do this and I'll give you a prize, like you might win a holiday or whatever. So, you know, externally motivating someone. But intrinsically, gamification really helps that kind of feel-good factor. You're like, yes, I'm at the top of the leaderboard. You get to, you know, when people say, what's the prize for this? And you're like, it's pride. You get your pride on the back of it. It's that kind of thing. So you feel accomplished. It encourages participation, because if you and your mates are competitive, you want to beat each other. Especially, look at sales, right? How many sales teams have a leaderboard? Implement a leaderboard for stuff like reporting phishing emails, that kind of thing. But you can work in a couple of ways. So you can have like a one-off basis for specific competitions. So when I do the escape rooms, so if I've got more than one escape room running at once, I'm like, right, guys, it's a competition. Who can get through the escape room the fastest and beat the clock? But you can also do that in ongoing learning. So if you've got an ongoing leaderboard about, you know, like I said, reporting phishing emails and that kind of thing, perfect. It'll encourage people to proactively look for it, because they're thinking, I want to get to the top of that board. And then give them, I don't know, a prize if you've reported the most phishing emails in a quarter or whatever. I do feel like potentially, I mean, if it was me, I'd just be reporting every email, probably phishing. I know it's from HR, but it's phishing.
Well, I know for a fact that that kind of thing would work at Lafide, because there are some very competitive people, and I'm sure that's the case with most companies. So, I'm completely with you. I think, like, let's talk now about users. I don't like the word users.
No, I hate it as well.
Yeah, it's not very good, but it is often said that, and I think Lafide's guilty of it as well in our content sometimes, that users are the weakest link. Mm-hmm. And that your users should be the thing that you know keep a strict eye on, and you watch them all the time. And I think you've got, you know, a bit of an issue with that as a phrase. So why do vendors like to push this narrative? Is it wrong?
It is categorically wrong. So if you're, let's put it this way: if your entire business can be taken down by someone clicking on a phishing email, I think you've got wider security problems. So how is the phishing email getting in the first place? Let's have a look at that. Maybe your email filter's not set up right. If you've got a flat network, which has allowed one phishing email to ransomware the entire business, I think you've probably got an infrastructure problem. If you've got LAPs misconfigured, if you've got no privileged access control, so I can immediately get onto your network and then I can elevate my privileges to a domain admin, that's not the end user's fault, is it? That is literally not that person's fault. They're not the weakest. So it's like when people say Windows is a weaker operating system than Linux. No, it's not. It's categorically not. It's just more widespread. So users are not the weakest link. They're just the biggest attack surface. Add on top of that the fact that we give them training, and I mean horrific training. So if you're sat there thinking, users are the weakest link, cool, okay, so what are you giving them to defend? How are you fixing that? If it was your firewall that was misconfigured, would you sit there and go, well, firewall's weak? Or would you sit and do something about it? Would you fix it? You'd fix it, wouldn't you? But that's not what we're doing. So we say to people, you're on the front line, going back to this military speak that we seem to like in cyber as well. You're on the front line. You're our first line of defense. Brilliant. Well, what armor have you given them? Something from Primark. Fantastic. How about upgrade to John
really.
Lewis version? Let's go John
not
Lewis.
Not really
version,
setting themselves up for success, are we? No.
Not all. But it drives me insane that people sit there and say, users are the weakest link. No, they're not. Do you know what's the weakest link? Your security posture. Fix that first.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, I think probably a lot of IT teams don't want to hear that, but you know, that's the case.
Yeah, no, they definitely don't. I've told them loads of times they definitely don't like it.
Yeah, good. Well, from the perspective of your wider employee base, then I mean they're always getting blamed, getting blamed for everything. So what do we do? How do we shift that narrative to be more of an empowering narrative? How do we empower our users rather than just blame them for everything that goes wrong?
So I think, like you said, you hate the word users, right? So everyone in IT is like, we've got all these users. No, you haven't. Do you know what you've got? You've got colleagues. You've got colleagues that are the biggest that are an asset for you to protect. The part of your infrastructure, the part of your environment, you need to protect them. So companies that end up blaming the end user, but then provide, like I said, provide them with fuck all training. How are you, so you're not helping them to understand it. You're just sitting there going, you're thick. Brilliant. Like, that's not helping anyone, is it? So you need to invest more in the people, because instead of them being the weakest link, they are the first line of defense, like we've said. So invest in them, because they're the people that are protecting your business. We also need to stop telling them off when they talk to each other. This drives me mental. Talk to each other about a phishing assessment, right? If someone sends me a phishing email, so in a real life scenario, if I've got a real phishing email in my inbox and my mate next door's got it, a real one, not one that the IT team sent, a real one, and I tell my mate about it, is the IT team going to be pissed off about that? Probably not. They're probably going to go, great, you've reported a phishing email. Thanks so much. But when the IT team send out a phishing email and people talk about it and no one clicks on it, that's suddenly a fail because they've talked about it. So now we're not breeding the right kind of behavior. So it's got to be
almost discouraging awareness.
Yeah. Why would you not want people to talk about it? I'd be buzzing if everyone started talking about it. It's brilliant. That's perfect. Yeah. Exactly what we want you to do. You need to reward the good behaviors. If you're communicating, fantastic. So we sit and say everyone shouldn't be working in silos, blah, blah, blah. But then we encourage working in silos. It makes no sense at all. And then additionally to that, the IT team and the security teams need to go get a better image in the business, because usually they're the ones that are, well, we used to, in my old, I've had a few jobs. One of the jobs we used to call them business prevention team, because I'm like, I want to do something and you're telling me I can't do it. And that's all you're saying. You're saying you can't do it at all. There's no workaround for it. There's no, this is the reason why you can't do it. It's just no. Great. Well, that's really, really helpful. That makes me really, really like you. Obviously not. You know what I mean? So if you're sat there just being grumpy every time someone talks to you, if you're not actually helping users, you're actually prohibiting them from doing the job.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I completely agree. There's been a big drive in the security world recently to improve people skills and improve, you know, interdepartmental relations. And I think that's something that still needs a lot of work. But we've painted a lovely negative picture of the world of cybersecurity awareness there. So that's great stuff. So maybe we can switch up a little bit and you can give me some examples of maybe some success stories that you've seen where proper training has actually helped improve cybersecurity.
Yeah, I mean, so I've got a couple of examples. One that I've done, and then one that one of my partners has done. So yeah, the stuff that I've done. So I sold. Unbelievably, this is everyone who knows me has heard this story about 30,000 times. I sold an escape room to the SAS.
Wow.
I know.
I bet they were very good at it.
Yeah, my friend was like, do you have to tell everyone this story? I was like, yes, they're the coolest customer anyone's ever had. So yes, I have.
You were allowed to tell people that story.
Yeah, I've got a testimonial from them, don't worry. They sent me a really nice testimonial that said, actually, from doing the escape rooms, we actually kicked off loads of conversations, people discussing, like, when they've been hacked or when their company's been hacked, and then what they could have done differently, and kind of helping relate that into real world scenarios. So in the future, then you're a bit more prepared. But I work with a company called Hoxhunt, who they're Scandinavian, I think, but they've got a big UK presence now. And I've seen all their case studies about users being educated enough to understand that reporting the issue is actually critical. Because if an issue is reported, then the company's got the knowledge there to remediate. Which is why we should use phishing assessments instead of using phishing assessments to berate users and make them go to some mandatory training. Phishing assessments should just be an assessment of your reporting mechanisms and how successful they are. Because if people are reporting things to us, then we can deal with it. But if people are hiding it from us, then we can't. So yeah, if like Hoxhunt have said that they've found loads of instances that they're getting higher report rates on phishing. Phishing emails, because that's the kind of behavior that's being rewarded, and that obviously helps to improve this posture of the company, because people can then, because then the IT team know what they're dealing with. But if it's just sat there in someone's inbox waiting to click on it, then it's just a ticking time.
That's good to know that we've got demonstrable evidence that cybersecurity training can work if it's done properly.
Yes.
So that is good. One thing I've heard you talk about before is hands-on learning, and you know, how it helps support knowledge retention. So could you perhaps just take a moment to discuss what the benefits of hands-on learning are in this context?
Yeah, so this is actual science, not from me just making this up, by the way. So when you engage more of your senses, so instead of like just watching a video where you're just listening to it and watching it, if you have actually got your hands on things, then it makes it a lot more memorable, because you're creating more connections in your brain, which means that your memory recall is a lot easier. So it's impossible to ignore it, because you've got to participate in it. It's better for memory recall. The forgetting curve actually slows down because you've created more memories. And it's much better for neurodiverse people or people with really short attention spans. Much like myself, I have got the attention span of a goldfish. But if I've got to stand there and do an activity for an hour rather than sitting and watching a video, I will engage in it a lot more. So yeah, hands-on learning, definitely the way forward, I think.
Yeah, well, I hugely agree. Are there any specific examples that you have of hands-on exercises that you've seen to be effective?
Yeah, I mean, so we do tabletop exercises with C-suite regularly, right? So why would we not push that further down the chain and let people get an understanding of cybersecurity without it just being us watching videos? So yeah, like I said, with the SAS, they thought it was a brilliant exercise, but those guys are used to working hands-on, right? They're not all sat behind a desk. Or hopefully they're not. Hopefully not, anyway.
Some of them must be.
But yeah, but it gets people talking, it gets people engaging. So I think we do, like, the escape rooms, obviously, I'm going to tell you they're brilliant as a hands-on exercise, but there's other tabletop exercises that you do. So I work with IP Performance, and they've got tabletop exercises where they've got like a breach simulator, but it's all interactive and you're chatting to each other. And I think, if you're doing hands-on stuff, it's just infinitely more engaging and it's more memorable. You'll talk about it. Well, let's put it this way. Have you ever gone home from work and said to your other half, hey, guess what I did today? I watched a security trading video. Unless it was an Ian Murphy one, it's never happened. But you might go home and be like, hey, guess what we did today? We did this hands-on thing where, I don't know, we did a cyber escape room, or we did this tabletop exercise, and this is what happened in it. Because it's something a bit different that's not just you sat at a computer.
Certainly more memorable, isn't it?
Hmm.
Well, are there some examples then of how companies can incorporate that kind of learning in those kind of practical experiences into their training programs at the moment?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm working with a few companies at the moment that are doing like awareness days, not just in October. Let's all remember, cybersecurity awareness isn't just for Halloween; it's for the entire year. We need to keep on top of it. So I've got a few companies that I'm talking to at the moment about running awareness days. You could have like mini challenges through the year. I don't know, like we said about reporting phishing emails, who can get to the top of the board with that kind of thing. I don't know, quizzes, prizes. Taking time away from the screen, though, to go and have conversations with people. So doing like lunch and learn, where you sat explaining, I don't know, something about cybersecurity, but not with a load of slides. Try and relate it to something practical. I mean, I was sat in the pub the other week with my 6-year-old, as you do, and my friend. We went for Sunday lunch. It's not as bad as it sounds. But we were teaching her about networking using beer maps. And she understood it a lot. If I just sat and talked to her about networking, she'd just look at me like, what the she's six, right? But we sat and put beer mats on the table and then made lines, and then we were like, this is, if I talk down this one, then it's going to come out this way, and this is how traffic moves along the line and that kind of thing. So just doing daft shit like that. Like, people do Lego days, don't they, where they've got, there's that game that you can do with Lego, like anything where you're not sat behind a bloody screen.
I mean, that's the most easy thing I think people can do, is just get away from the screen and do something actual physical.
Yeah.
I'm fully on board with that. And we've talked a bit about escape rooms, and obviously you're a massive fan of escape rooms and incorporating them into cybersecurity awareness, as you should be.
It would be weird if I wasn't.
Yes, right? it would be odd. Yeah. I'm going to ask you then: are there any limitations to escape rooms when it comes to addressing cybersecurity awareness?
It can't cover all of the threats that we've got out there. I mean, it probably could do, but I just haven't built them yet.
I was going to say, what can cover all this? all the threats.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, they do. So they lend themselves really, really well to talking about password security, hopefully for obvious reasons, because you get a password, then you move to the next bit, and then you need a password. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. So it's really good for password security. We try and incorporate other bits in there. So the first escape room that we've got has got like a phishing email in there, and that's kind of, you meant to understand that's how the attacker got in, and you can kind of have conversations off the back of that. But yeah, it's not, it's never going to cover everything. And the fact that it is physically interactive means it's never going to cover all of your organization either. So, you know, with remote working, it can make it a little bit difficult. But then if you're making it into an event and you're doing it as a kind of, this is a bit of a treat for you rather than come and do some training, then you can drum up a bit more interest. For larger or global companies, then it could be a bit more difficult. But I've not taken over the world yet. I am going to South Africa a couple of times this year, though, so maybe world domination is on the.
Too far away then.
Yeah, no, yeah. So, but yeah, I think you don't want to just do escape rooms, because then it would get repetitive. So I think, like anything, you've got to have a mix of stuff going on. To keep it fresh. So yeah, I think probably just the fact that we can't cover every threat that is out there.
It makes sense then. So how do we? So we've got to have both then, presumably. We've got to have some interactive experiences, and we've got to have some more traditional cybersecurity training stuff. So what's the balance then? How do we get the balance right in that?
So I think it goes back to what we were saying earlier about how you engage people. So what is it that they're interested in? But also look at their learning styles. So people have got different ways that they like to learn. I mean, I used to, God knows why, but I used to be really, really good at listening. I'm at it now. Which doesn't bode well for me in sales, really, does it? But yeah, I'm pretty good at listening.
You're doing well today.
Listening, I've got no attention span. So I can't sit. I cannot sit and listen to someone talk at me for half an hour. Like, that just doesn't interest me. Doing something, I'm brilliant with. But other people aren't like that. Some people prefer to just listen. Like, they might want to listen to a podcast. So do stuff like, you know, do a podcast and talk about cybersecurity. But you need to ask people what it is that they want to do and get them involved in shaping their own training, because I think you'll get much better engagement if you've asked them, how do you want to learn this? I think it's just a simple question of asking your users, what do you want to do? Like, what's the easiest way? Let's break down the barriers to it. What's the easiest way for me to transmit this information to you? And find out what they want to do. And then build your awareness program around that.
Yeah, well, it sounds like escape rooms then specifically, they'd massively complement existing awareness programs. Would you agree with that then?
Yeah, so I've said this from the beginning, they're never ever going to replace a security awareness program because it's just not possible. And you need to have, like we said, different elements of learning styles. But I think, they're not a stick, they are a carrot. Hopefully, anyway, everyone that has done them has enjoyed them. So they're kind of doing it as a not necessarily as a reward, but it's something that you want to get involved in. So trying to frame cybersecurity training as a positive, rather than it being, you fucked up on a phishing assessment, so now you have to sit through Dull Dave and his 500 PowerPoint slide presentation. They're great for kinesthetic learners. They're great as a kind of fun activity if you want to do a couple through the year or whatever. So they can definitely complement it, but they're never going to replace it, and that's not the intention with it at all anyway.
Completely fair. So let's take a step back then and just talk a bit more generally about security awareness programs and kind of what they should look like. Could you kind of outline for us a couple of the key or the maybe the most important components of what makes an effective overall security awareness program?
Yeah, so I think we've probably covered it all already, but as to recap what we've discussed, so I think we need to look at continuous learning, because it can't just be a one-off and then you never learn anything ever again. It needs to be bite-sized information, because people's attention span, we live in a TikTok generation. I mean, I sit on an evening and scroll Instagram reels. I'm too old for TikTok, but I do Instagram. I do Instagram reels because I can listen to something for 30 seconds for a minute, but all over that, I'm like, nah. And I think a lot of people have got that kind of attention span now. So bite-sized information is important. Interactive element, super important. Doing stuff that's hands-on, because it helps you remember it for longer. Stop beating people up So stop using a stick, start using a carrot. So I think that'll help affect more positive cultural change within your organization. And having a mixture of things that you've got available, the mixture of tools that we've got available for users to engage with, because like I said, one size does not fit all.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we definitely touched on this before, but every organization is obviously very different. They have their own challenges, their own different cultures and that kind of stuff. So it's not a one size fits all approach. So what can organizations do, practically speaking, to make sure that their programs are gonna fit, hopefully?
So I think we sit there and think, my business is super special. My business is so different to everyone else's business. It's not. You know what? It's not. You all got the same challenges. You've all got issues with phishing. We know you have. Everyone's got an issue with phishing. We've all got an issue with password security. Everyone's got that. So it doesn't matter what industry you're in, and it doesn't matter what sector you're in, it doesn't matter how big your company is. Those are the two challenges that you've got. Because okay, it's user related because users, they're not the weakest link, they're the biggest attack surface. So that's the thing that we need to be, they're the things that we need to be focusing on. So I think, yeah, tailoring it in terms of the threats that you've got. I mean, there might be the odd industry or the odd organization that's got slightly different challenges. So I don't know, like legal firms. I was talking to a CISO the other day at a legal firm, and he was saying we've got wire fraud as a big issue for the organization. So yeah, I mean, there's some industry specific stuff. Oh, OT, that's a whole other barrel of fish. But yeah, I think most organizations have the exact same challenges. So those two things. But in terms of culture, so you need to just look at what your culture is. So if you're a email digital first business, then you might react better to online learning. If you've got a load of developers who like sitting there and doing stuff on the computer, then maybe doing stuff on the computer does work better for them. But definitely look at getting a consensus from your people and understanding what your if you have to first of all understand what your organizational culture is before you can decide what kind of training fits it. Because I think a lot of this is a whole other thing that I could go on a rant about, but I think a lot of companies they say that they've got culture X when actually in reality it's not that at all. It's a totally different culture. When you start working there, then it's not the same. So yeah, I think you need to have an actual realistic understanding of what your organizational culture looks like, and then you can kind of tailor it to that. But make sure, like, I think the biggest thing is to make it inclusive, so that everyone can kind of be a part of it. That's that.
Makes sense. I'm gonna chuck another marketing term at you, because I know from a marketing side of things, everybody loves talking about best practices, and writing blogs about what the best practices are and everything. So what would be some best practices for companies when it comes to improving their current security awareness stuff?
Okay, so we've got things like phishing assessments, which I hate phishing assessments. I used to have to sell phishing assessments, and I refused point blank to sell them to people. Because I thought I used to say to people, what are you using this phishing assessment for? What's the actual outcome that you want from it? And if I had any inkling that they were going to bat users over the head with it, I said, I'm not selling you it. You can literally go buy it somewhere else. I don't care. So yeah, I think, but phishing assessments in this instance, in terms of monitoring your ongoing, like the ongoing effectiveness of your programs, it can be useful. So we can look at things like the reporting rates of phishing emails. So then you can see, oh, the organizational culture is moving towards reporting it rather than hiding it. So can stuff like, password audits. So we can see, have people actually been using password managers, or have they actually got the same password for every single service? So stuff like that. Obviously there's, tools out there so they can monitor the dark web for leaked credentials and that kind of thing. But I think the important thing is to do is to establish some KPIs for your security team. Because then they're invested in helping your people. So, like I said, getting phishing emails reported, that should be a KPI for your security team. Because that makes them invest in actually going out and educating those users and engaging with them in a way that makes them want to report it, rather than being a grumpy chap and telling them off every time they've clicked on something. That's not the way to engage with people. So I think that kind of thing can really, really support it.
Yeah, very good. We're gonna let's take a quick move to everyone's favorite topic now and talk a little bit about compliance.
Yay.
I know, it's almost as fun as cybersecurity awareness training, isn't it? But yeah, how does it, be it boring, it is also very important. How is compliance at the moment driving the need for security awareness?
So I think compliance has always kind of been the main driver behind it, because, why do companies invest in anything unless they've got to be compliant with some standard or another? So I think it's included in stuff like ISO 27001, FISMA, SOX, PCI DSS, all those main standard, all those big standards. They all stipulate that staff should have some training in the handling of personal information, which means cyber. You have to understand cybersecurity at that point. I think the issue that we have is that companies see these requirements as something that they need to do to tick a box, and then they don't really take it seriously. So they tick a box by doing it once a year, and they go, "Yep, all of our people are definitely trained in keeping personal information safe." Are they really? Like, where's the proof of that? But yeah,
Yeah,
it does drive the need for it. Like I said, it's a stipulation, but it's how seriously people take their compliance with these standards. Because lots of people just use compliance as a, we've got this, so we can sell to more customers now.
I know what you mean. Are there any industries or any particular regulations where cybersecurity awareness training is particularly heavily pushed or really crucial?
Yeah, I mean, stuff like, well, where you're handling particularly sensitive data, so presumably stuff like legal teams, healthcare, FSI. I'd arguably say anything in OT as well probably needs a heavier focus on security awareness training, because, if I always say, if IT gets hacked, cool, you might lose some data, whatever. If OT gets hacked, shit goes bang. Stuff
Yeah, no,
bubbles
true,
up. So
very
yeah, you
true.
need to be a lot more aware in those kind of environments, which ironically is probably where there's the least awareness. But anyway, that's another
Yeah,
whole podcast in that in
and
itself.
presumably industries like the defense industry as well, like the SAS, that's particularly important as well.
Exactly. And it's such a
Yeah,
good job that it's such a good job that I was here to help them, really, wasn't
it really
it?
is. Yeah, keeping the nation's data safe.
Yeah, pretty much. If
So.
anything happens to the SAS, by the way, I'm not it's not my fault.
You're not liable. No,
No.
don't worry. So that, I mean, compliance is a massive challenge for IT teams and for a number of reasons, not just for security awareness, but and there's always a challenge, I think, between how you balance culture where you want to be. Are you compliance driven or are you culture driven in terms of security awareness? So what's the challenge of maintaining that balance?
I don't think the two things should necessarily be mutually exclusive, to be honest. So you should be doing security awareness training anyway, which then helps you to be compliant. But I mean, a lot of the compliance driven training is stuff that's NCSC certified, and unfortunately, no, I'm not sitting on any NCSC certified
Heaven
suppliers here,
forbid.
because I have not mentioned any names at all during this podcast. But there is a lot of NCSC certified training that is dull as dishwater, which means that no one's actually engaging with it, which then takes away from you actually creating a security aware culture. NCSC has actually, though, brought out a new certification for CIR, which is Cyber Incident Response, I think. No, it's not Incident Response. Cyber Incident Exercising. CIE, not CIR. Yeah, so that's kind of doing, like, it's basically certifying tabletop exercises. So that's some,
Right,
so
okay.
that'll be quite cool. So I'm actively working towards that. But, as with anything that is remotely related to a government body, then it's insanely drawn out process. So
Yeah,
working on getting
I know.
the on the escape room certified, because then you will actually be able to tick a box by doing something cool, like an escape room.
Wow.
But I think, yeah, it's super important that you just have a mix of approaches, because there's always going to be the compliance driven stuff, which might be you have to do NCSC certified courses, which I've seen, like, I have seen that as a stipulation before. But also you want to do something that's a bit of a treat for your users, which is why everyone should just do in a cyber escape room.
That is the perfect way, I think, to finish. Yeah, I think we've hopefully given IT teams a lot to think about there. And yeah, hopefully we can. Sorry, go on.
I sound like I've been super negative towards them. Like, I think they're all twats. I don't think they're all twats. Loads of my friends are CISOs and loads of my friends work in security. But I think there is a large proportion of the industry that kind of thinks like.
I don't think we've said anything that those people would disagree with, really. Mm. So yeah, no, I think you're safe there. Don't worry. But yeah, I mean, thank you very much for joining me, and thank you for giving us your time. It's been really interesting, and I mean, hopefully, we can make strides towards a better security awareness culture.
Yes, fingers crossed.